In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, July 16, 2010, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is, of course, the Federal News Countdown, and some great folks in studio this week with some terrific selections for the stories they think are the three most important federal news stories of the week for people who work for the government. First time on the Federal News Countdown for Lisa Mascolo of Accenture. Welcome back to the studio. You've been here before for Chatter, but glad to have you on the Countdown this week. And also Julie Myers Wood, not your first time at the rodeo, so to speak. I'm going to grab that microphone there and pull it closer to you. And thank you for coming in again. And doing the Countdown. We have a lot of great stories lined up. Before we get into your stories, your number three stories, though, we were having a conversation that I think is pretty interesting, and I want to get it going a little bit on the air for just a couple of minutes about a story that turned out to be our number one story of the week as far as web hits goes, and that's the TSA job applications on the pizza box story. You can see the graphics at federalnewsradio.com. Essentially, the gig is Transportation Security Administration made a deal with a pizza company whose name escapes me at the moment. But the entire lid of the pizza box, when you get it delivered to your house, is a solicitation to ask you to become a screener for TSA. And this subject turned into a pretty lively discussion when we got started because, Julie, as you were saying, Transportation Security Administration has kind of a unique place in Homeland Security and is the image that they're going for the agency overall and for the job of screener. Does that comport necessarily with soliciting people to come take those jobs on the top of a pizza box? What do you think about that?
Well, I think you have to hand it to them for being very creative. Mm-hmm. And all of us eat pizza. Most of us have it delivered. But I think there is a question. You know, morale at TSA has historically been very low. You know, I hope that will improve with the new administrator, Mr. Pistol, in there. But, you know, are TSA screeners going to feel better about their jobs knowing that they're being advertised on pizza boxes? Mm-hmm. Or does that make them think that it's a fast food kind of job, which is not the kind of agency that I think the TSA screeners want to have? They want to be a more professional law enforcement agency. So I think that is, there are some risks with this kind of advertising.
Do you think that makes much difference one way or the other, Lisa?
I think that they must be going after a younger crowd, the younger generation, and I think it's really important that they bring in different people with different skill sets and different interests. And not all advertisements are going to work for everybody, but I think as long as they cover the spectrum, they have a possibility of attracting new people.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just interesting to look at the ways that not only agencies but private companies try to attract talent. It's interesting to me because we keep hearing about how bad the economy is and how many people are looking for work, and yet obviously TSA is not getting either the quality or quantity or maybe both of the people that they want, and trying to come up with new and creative ways. Just hanging the shingle out there or putting it on usajobs.gov isn't enough. And so they feel compelled to do it in different ways. All right, that is available at federalnewsradio.com. You can see the graphics there and more information about it. And we are ready now to get formally underway with this week's Federal News Countdown with...
Number three!
The third most important story of the week, according to Lisa Mascolo, is a Washington Post Federal Diary story from Joe Davison with the headline, Contract Work is Essential, but it Requires Parental Supervision. I was surprised, I have to say, Lisa, to see something that I don't necessarily expect to see in a column like that, well, in an article like this, and that is it kind of turned out to be a column. What'd you think of this piece?
I thought it was a terrific piece. I like the analogy of requiring supervision. I'm not sure it's necessarily about parental supervision. I think it's more about the proper collaboration between contractors and the government to actually cure what ails us in the contracting space. But I thought it was a very interesting article, and I thought the testimony yesterday on Capitol Hill was interesting as well.
Mm-hmm. The concept of the way this is presented, Joe mentions in this story the testimony from James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation. The private sector's increasing role in public wars can be a good thing for American security. Yet 2 pages later, he says that providing for the common defense as a core constitutional responsibility fits squarely with the inherently governmental standard that determines what Uncle Sam, not contractors, do. I don't see what I think it sounds like Joe sees, which is that those two things are not necessarily opposed to each other.
I don't think those two things are necessarily opposed to each other. I think that there's plenty of places where the contractor community absolutely belongs. And when the government officially determines the definition of inherently governmental, that's the work that the government should do, and the contractors should not be in that space. So I don't see those two parts as being opposed.
We're going to do a conversation about inherently governmental in a couple of weeks on this program with Alan Berman, former OFPP administrator who essentially wrote Inherently Governmental, Colleen Kelly, the head of NTEU, National Treasury Employees Union, who has not been a big fan of efforts like A76, and Angela Stiles, who pretty much wrote A76 for the Bush administration. So that should be pretty interesting, and maybe we'll be able to figure out what's inherently governmental and what isn't, at least according to the views of some people. So we'll have more details on that beginning on Monday on Federal News Radio. What do you take away from this story, Julie, as far as contracting and so forth?
Well, it continues to be a great challenge, and the challenge is how can the government use the private sector effectively and have the kind of oversight that you need. If you think about, you know, SBINet, for example, the individuals that were running that at the beginning of SBINet were people that had experience with Deepwater, that had experience with other failures of large contracting projects, and yet SBINet wasn't successful. Mm-hmm. So hearings like the one that occurred yesterday are very useful, but how is Congress going to help the government be more effective in managing the private sector workforce that it needs to utilize?
We're going to have some highlights of that hearing on the program on Monday, so listen for that. Story number three, as selected by Julie Myers-Wood, is a New York Times story with the headline, Bill Would Ease Telecommuting for U.S. Workers. And we'll get into a deeper conversation of this because, Lisa, you also found a lot of import here. But, Julie, do you think we're finally going to get some telework progress made with this bill, or is this just another in the series?
Well, it is another in the series of incremental steps, but I think, you know, a bill is finally going to pass that the president is going to sign. Mm-hmm. And the question is, are agencies now going to lean forward towards effectively using telework, or are they still going to try to find ways around it? Are mm-hmm. they going to try to say that people are using, have security clearances or need to use classified material, or that it's essential in the agency that folks actually be present? Mm-hmm. I think one of the big questions is how can managers manage people effectively when they're working from home, and what can the government do to give those mid-level managers and senior managers the tools they need? You know, a lot of people manage by just walking around.
Right.
You can't do that when somebody's sitting in their home in Silver Spring.
Yeah. How did that work when you were at ICE? What was policy and what was reality in your view?
Well, we were just kind of gingerly stepping into telework, like mm-hmm. a lot of DHS, you know, was. We actually tried telework for our COOP location. And mm-hmm. so it was a way that we were actually also preparing for disasters while allowing people to try out telework. And I would tell you that in some instances it was successful, mm-hmm. and in some it was not. One of the big challenges is often a manager will know who can be successful and who will not be successful working from home. How can the government allow people to use this in a nimble way? Mm-hmm. You know, will a manager be forced to use a PIP every time telework isn't working out? If
yeah.
that's the case, then it's really going to drag down the overall productivity of the workforce.
Well, let's talk about that experience a little bit more when we come back, because that you've hit, I think you've just nailed exactly what every manager I've ever talked to who's in that position is talking about. I like to, at least from time to time, be able to put my eyes on my people and make sure that what's going on is what really needs to be going on. So let's talk about that a little bit more when we come back on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Julie Myers-Wood, story number three this week from the New York Times. Bill would ease telecommuting for U.S. workers on In Depth with Francis Rose. Back in a moment. Mm-hmm.
Deloitte invites you to join Debriefs, a series of 60-minute webcasts focused on topics of interest to federal and state government executives. Debriefs webcasts feature their professionals discussing critical issues that affect your organization. For more information and to register, visit Deloitte.com/US/debriefs. That's visit Deloitte.com/US/debriefs.
How do you keep your infrastructure safe without limiting your people and productivity? CA Technologies let you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems. Can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you enforce defense in detail, not just defense in depth? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems? With CA Technologies, you can. To learn how, visit ca.com/security.
The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the Fed Cloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
Please join Jim Fleisig July 20th at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will discuss critical issues on optimizing government's infrastructure. The panel includes government leaders from FAA, DISA, and the Department of Interior. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum, Tuesday, July 20th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by Ciena, Riverbed Technology, and Red Hat.
Are you tired of hiding your varicose and spider veins? Tired of the fear and frustration that someone will actually see your legs? Then it's time to say goodbye to those ugly veins for good. Because for the next 24 hours, you can try Vinacura free. All-natural Vinacura is specially formulated with a clinically proven ingredient that dramatically reduces the appearance of varicose and spider veins. It comes from Europe and is finally available in the United States. To get your free trial, just call 1-800-300-2550 in the next 24 hours. With Vinacura, you can finally say goodbye to summers without shorts, so long to the embarrassment of wearing swimsuits in public, and I'm done to all the misery caused by varicose and spider veins. Visibly erase your ugly veins, even if you've had them for years, by calling for your risk-free trial of Vinacura. 1-800-300-2550. But you must hurry. This free offer is only available for the next 24 hours. Call 1-800-300-2550.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Friday edition of the Dorabeck Insider. The telework bill, it's passed the House. What does that mean for you? We'll talk to the primary sponsor of that legislation, Representative John Sarbanes. And we'll continue our series, Cool Jobs in Government. Today, when you order stamps, where do they store all of them? We'll give you a hint. It's in a cave, but you'll probably be shocked where it is. We'll tell you this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is this week's Federal News Countdown as we count down the three most important stories of the week as chosen by Lisa Mascolo of Accenture and Julie Myers. Tell us what you're doing now since you've left ICE.
Sure. I have a software firm that has developed a product to help employers fight identity theft, particularly in the immigration realm. Mm-hmm. And I also do some consulting work, including for Accenture. So I do a variety of things.
And full disclosure, I didn't know that before I scheduled the two of you to come on together. So I appreciate having both of you here, and I appreciate the time that you took to choose your news stories. And we're up to
number two.
And the second most important news story of the week, as you were tipped in the last segment from Lisa Mascolo, is headlined, House Passes Bill to Expand Telework, Steve Losey's story in Fed Times earlier this week. And we were talking before the break, Julie, about your experience at ICE with telework, and it sounds like you're dealing with the same thing that managers are dealing with at all levels, all over government, and that is finding that balance of who can do it. And it's not only who can do it generally in job descriptions, it's also particular people that are well suited for it, I would imagine.
That's exactly right. And that's where it gets a little bit dicey in terms of managers who might be afraid to say that somebody isn't eligible because they're afraid of a lawsuit or something else. So I think it's easier, you know, in the private sector. Telework can be such a great benefit, but it is easier in the private sector because I think you have more flexibility if an employee isn't working out, and perhaps even more metrics to evaluate someone along the way.
Lisa, somebody in a private sector company that does a lot of telework, do you think the people in the federal government, obviously OPM understands the value in recruiting and retention to telework, but do you think maybe the managers at agencies don't really get how much their people like to do it when they have a chance to do it? I mean, because it's really powerful, I think.
I think it's very powerful. We see it, obviously, in our business to be very powerful. And the thing I really like about it, I hope from the government's perspective, even if you have people who are reluctant, managers who are reluctant, I think when you understand the multiple benefits of it, right, it goes right to the heart of all the issues that we've got today, right, with the budget problem. We'll be saving, if 20% of the people telework 20% of the time, we'll be saving building space. We'll be saving air conditioning. We'll be saving, you know, exhaust fumes. It's a whole additional benefit from a green, I like to call it green government, not only green about the environment, but green in terms of dollars. Mm-hmm. And so I think you can get people excited, provided you give them the right tools to actually manage it. And I think that's the key. If they don't have the tools to manage it, if you don't have the collaboration tools, so occasionally you can see each other, you know, from one laptop to another or an office to a laptop, or you don't have the tools to manage and to set expectations, it can be a problem.
Now, will the savings, though, that you get from the actual telework itself be offset by trying to get the technology that's necessary to do it, do you think?
I don't think so. I think the cost of the collaboration technology that's out there today is really, really trivial. Mm-hmm. And I think when you match that up against the green environment stuff, I think the benefits are clear.
Yeah, that's one reason that GSA has been really hot on telework, is the environmental aspects of it, even more so than some of the other elements, it seems. This Federal Times story says HR 1722, the Telework Improvements Act, will require agencies to have a written telework policy and appoint telework managing officers. Those officials will be in charge of identifying and removing roadblocks preventing telework and will work with senior leaders to incorporate teleworking into agencies' COOP plans. And that seems to be an area, as you said, at ICE, that you did at ICE, where that's a logical first step, don't you think, Julie?
I think so, particularly in a law enforcement culture, which may be one of the cultures that's most resistant to moving to telework. Actually, trying this out through the COOP process allowed us to make sure that our COOP planning was sufficient and also allowed us to try how does it work having employees on telework. And mm-hmm. so for some, it worked very successfully, and I think this bill is terrific.
I think one of the things that would be interesting would be if we don't see a bunch of, what did he call them, teleworking managing officers. It's not a, shouldn't be a permanent full-time position. We shouldn't be proliferating people to be these office managers. Mm-hmm. It can be somebody else's job. It's part of their responsibility broadly. I'm not sure you need a whole bunch of people to be teleworking managers.
And I also thought one thing interesting about the bill is the prohibition from allowing people to telework if they've been using the internet to surf porn mm-hmm. while at the office or something else. But I mean, putting porn aside, surfing the internet is such a huge time drain for people that are in government buildings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, government offices have taken a lot of steps to try to reduce the sites that government employees can access. You know, how is that going to work in telework? Will people actually be more productive because they're at home, or will they then start to get on internet sites, you know, even aside from porn, that you'd prefer them not to be on during business hours?
Well, and then there are stories. I saw one in the Federal Times this week about the guy, and I'll try to pull it up during the break, but guy that was just is going to go to jail because he spent I wish I had the details in front of me, a ridiculous amount of time, but he was not surfing the web, he was playing tennis and going to casinos.
I mean, those kinds of things are not helpful. Those are the kinds of things that make managers go, wait a minute, especially when it turns out this guy had reprimanded another employee for putting too many overtime hours on his or her timesheet in 2002, and this dude turns around and he's in the casino part of the time. That's great.
But, I mean, I think it's a good part of the overall strategy to reduce costs, right? At this point in the budget crisis, right? I'm not sure there's ever been a bigger budget crisis, right? 67% of the budget's probably untouchable, right? It's entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
44% of the budget is borrowed money, whether it's Chinese money or Japanese money. According to my friend Tom Davis, you know, 40%+ of the households in this country don't pay federal income tax. There's mm-hmm. a serious budget crisis. This is a great opportunity to help with that. It's one of the tools in the arsenal.
But then I think government should be looking to other tools that the private sector has used to reduce costs and be more green, like some of the kind of office sharing and other environments that really do cut down. If fewer workers are in the office, we should be heating and cooling fewer offices.
Absolutely.
You want to know something funny about the Internet? I can't find that story online, but I know exactly where it is in hard copy. It's laying on my desk, so we'll pull that out during the break. The number two story of the week is chosen by Lisa Mascolo, is from Federal Times. Steve Losey's piece called House Passes Bill to Expand Telework. We'll find out what story number two of the week is, according to Julie Myers Wood, when In Depth with Francis Rose continues. It's the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Luke Russer. So far, so good in the Gulf. As tests on the newly capped oil well continue, NBC's Mara Schiavo-Campo says BP is warning this isn't a permanent fix.
Now, if this works as they hope that it does, they'll be able to use this cap essentially to shut in the well as a temporary measure until they get that relief well completed.
Cement will eventually be poured down the relief wells to plug the well bore for good. On Wall Street, stocks dropped today after earnings reports from two big banks disappointed investors and a survey showed consumers less positive about the economy. A former State Department employee has been sentenced to life in prison for spying for Cuba. Kendall Myers says he didn't intend to hurt the U.S. The judge called that, quote, perplexing. And it's a weekend coastal getaway for the first family. They're visiting Acadia National Park, hoping to hike and enjoy the scenery without any public events. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Luke Russert, NBC News Radio.
Aging is inevitable, but now there's Night Skin, an age-defying cream from award-winning cosmetic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry. Night Skin stimulates the growth of collagen and elastin to restore firmness, and Night Skin has pigment reducers to fade those unwanted dark spots. Youthful skin is a phone call away.
To try Night Skin risk-free, dial 1-800-509-4152. Call now to try Night Skin risk-free. Dial 1-800-509-4152. That's 1-800-509-4152.
And now, two more facts you didn't know. Fact 1. Hydrogen is the most abundant element in the universe. Fact 2. GEICO can also help you with renter's insurance. And that's important, because when you rent, the building itself may be insured, but your possessions are not. So GEICO can help you make sure you're really covered. For all the details, visit geico.com. Know the second most abundant thing in the universe? Commercials.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from July 15th, 2010. The G fund is unchanged at $13.34. A rise of 0.04 for the F fund at 14.10. The C fund is up 0.02 at 13.13. The S fund loses 0.08 at $17.15. The I fund rises 0.08 at 17.43. Your L funds all higher. The 2010 is up 0.01 at 15.44. The 2020 gains 0.01 at $15.40. The 2030 also up 0.01 at 15.50. The 2040 rises 0.02 at $15.64. And the L income picks up 0.01 at 14.09. Check your rates
anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Dr. Doug Fridsma, Acting Director of Interoperability and Standards, HHS, on the Federal Executive Forum on Health IT, sponsored by CA Technologies.
Up until about 6 months ago, I was a practicing physician. I would like to see a world in which when a provider goes in to see a patient and they have to choose between their stethoscope and their health information technology, that they see it as the critical piece of taking good care of patients.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
How do you keep your infrastructure safe without limiting your people and productivity? CA Technologies let you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems. Can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you enforce defense in detail, not just defense in depth? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems? With CA Technologies, you can. To learn how, visit ca.com/security.
Listen next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Hear from FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate, Federal Environment Executive Michelle Moore, Dr. David Blumenthal on Health IT, Rich Haley on Managing Financial Resources at the FBI, Professor Tom Davenport on Analytics and Making Better Decisions, and Alec Ross on Using Social Media to Advance U.S. Diplomatic Goals. All of this and more next week on the Business of Government magazine with host Michael Keegan.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
It's Bethesda Week at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to Bethesda's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more.
This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to Rock Creek, an award-winning restaurant where every week is Restaurant Week.
Discovery Galleries, a premier art gallery providing custom framing solutions. And Gaffney's Restaurant, Bethesda's best-kept secret.
See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
Here's Robert Lentz, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, Cyber Identity and Information Assurance, on the Cyber Warfare Prevention Securing Your Software and Applications panel, sponsored by Fortify Software.
75% of the breaches are occurring at the application level. So a lot of our network defense capabilities aren't doing the job. We've long recognized the application layer has been a major source of vulnerability. Well, we really have tried to deal with it in a way that has left this area open for the kind of attacks that we're seeing every single day.
To listen to the program made possible by Fortify Software in its entirety, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Your mission-critical IT system just got hacked. Confidential data stolen. Could this have been prevented? Fortify Software Security Assurance Solutions are helping government organizations secure the software they depend on to run their agency's most mission-critical operations. Find the vulnerabilities inside your software. Fix them quickly and cost-effectively. Fortify your applications with security. Visit Fortify.com. That's Fortify.com.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for July is the Lupus Foundation of America. More than 80,000 people in the greater D.C. area have lupus, and most are women. Lupus is a chronic, life-threatening autoimmune disease with no known cure. The expanded Lupus Foundation of America, D.C., Maryland, Virginia chapter offers many free services, such as support groups and workshops, to help patients live life to the fullest. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com. Community Spotlight is brought to you by Ackerman Security Systems.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown for this week. And we're up to story number two from Julie Myers Wood from the Wall Street Journal. The headline is Policing Illegal Hires Put Some Employers in a Bind. And this is something we've been talking about on this station since you were at ICE, and that is the issue of the work that employers are going to have to do to meet the rules that the federal government's putting in place for them as kind of they're turning into the go-between between the government and the employees who may or may not be here legally.
That's right. And although this article is about employers caught in the crossfire, what I thought was really interesting for federal employees is federal agencies are actually firing at each other. You know, this article is talking about how you have different regulatory regimes that are really at cross purposes. And so now you have ICE being very aggressive in certain sorts of audits. You have the Department of Labor being very aggressive in a different sort of way. Mm-hmm. And you have Department of Justice, the Office of Special Counsel for Immigration-Related Unfair Practices. They're all doing different things. And I think this article really shows the lack of coordination between these agencies on the regulatory environment that the Obama administration wants to have and how hard it is for an employer as it's getting all these different mixed messages and, frankly, how hard it is for a federal agent who doesn't really know which way the government is speaking on these topics.
How do you sort all of that out? I mean, are each of these agencies doing something that is within what their agency is supposed to be doing? Do you think they are,
but I don't think there is enough talk and communication between the Department of Labor, the Department of Justice, and the Department of Homeland Security. And frankly, I think that's one difficulty with much of the immigration enforcement being over the Department of Homeland Security is that DOJ is not having the same involvement and coordination. If this had happened back when the INS was in existence, the Deputy Attorney General could have gotten together the head of INS and the head of the Office of Special Counsel and said, you know, look, guys, you seem at cross purposes. How can you have a consistent message out here?
Mm-hmm.
Now you have two big agencies, and there's no one to kind of force that coordination. And so I think having a centralized message could really help not only businesses but also federal workers know what they should be advising employers.
Lisa, it sounds like they could use the services of a highly skilled consulting company to help them figure out how to sort all of this out and get these jurisdictions aligned instead of siloed.
Well, I think the silo is the key to a lot of the problems, whether we're talking about an immigration issue or we're talking about procurement reform, whatever the subject is, silo tends to be at the bottom of a lot of these issues. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge is, to Julie's point, it is about the communication and the coordination and the collaboration. How do you drive that? Even within an agency, there are silos, and then you've got multiple agencies focused on a single problem, whether it's immigration or whatever it is. How do you get them to collaborate without them feeling like they're giving up the responsibility that they have to uphold the law, without them feeling like they're compromising? It's a real change management problem.
That's absolutely right. And I think some of the fault does lie with the legislative branch, is they put into effect these laws that are inconsistent in various ways. And so no matter how much coordination there is between various agencies, they all, as Lisa said, are sworn to uphold their own set of laws.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think as Congress begins to consider immigration reform, hopefully sometime in this decade, hopefully in the next 2 years, you know, maybe they can think about how this balancing act, quote unquote, they've created really works in reality and how it hurts employers and how they need to be kind of more clear cut in what they're seeking
to do. And that's another communication coordination challenge, right? Writing policy is a fine thing, but having an actual understanding of what it's going to take to implement that policy that's been written and how it potentially conflicts or overlaps with other policy, I think is the real challenge of government today, that communication and coordination. Somebody writes the policy, somebody else gets stuck implementing it. There's room for interpretation. I think when policy gets written and legislation gets written, it'd be even more helpful to have more coordination with the agencies that are going to have responsibility for implementing, because they've got some perspective on what it's going to take.
And more of a feedback loop.
Exactly.
You know, and how we all thought it would work this certain way. Here's reality. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you, Congress, need to kind of look and tweak certain things, or maybe we can tweak certain things on a regulatory basis.
Julie, did you bring your crystal ball today? Because I was going to ask you, and you gave me an opening there. There's no chance that immigration legislation is going to happen this year, is there? There's no time for it, is there?
Well, you know, some still say in lame duck that there could, depending on how, you know, what happens in the midterm elections, that maybe in the lame duck session there could be folks who could move forward. But I think it's highly unlikely. But it's such a shame because really the beginning of the administration is when you really need to push immigration reform forward. It's so divisive. There's so many different issues, and you need a strong conservative push, and you don't need that at the tail end of an administration.
But if there has to be a lame duck session where it could happen, I mean, it's right at the top of the list with health care reform to try to get repealed.
Well, that's...
It seems to me...
That's exactly right, although once something's in, you know, once something's in law, because immigration is so difficult, it might be hard to undo it. I mean, that's why there's so many inconsistencies, frankly, in the immigration law right now. It's this onion that has all these kind of different controversial provisions that don't agree with each other because Congress doesn't go back and do a clean slate. But I think a lame duck is extremely unlikely, but that's the only prospect people are really talking about for this year.
Julie Myers-Woods, story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week. Is headline Policing Illegal Hires Puts Some Employers in a Bind, and you can find that in all of our stories later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. I did want to mention the story that we talked about in the last segment that I was trying to find in the Federal Times about the guy who was ripping off the agency was Housing and Urban Development. Is headline Stolen Time, Stolen Money. It's on page 10 of the latest edition of the Federal Times. And it talks about a man named Herman Ransom, who spent 825 hours between 2001 and 2007 playing tennis and gambling at casinos instead of being on the job. And because of that, because he got busted, he's going to do a year and a day in jail, repay $46,925 to HUD for a salary that he took while he was gambling and playing tennis, and was convicted of 10 counts of wire fraud and 10 counts of theft of public funds. So I'm going to file this news story under please don't do this at the office.
And so many federal employees are always doing the right thing. So it's a shame. You know, this this makes them all look bad.
Yep, this is the kind of thing that people talk about at Tea Party rallies and stuff like that, probably. That story will be posted as an extra on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. We're up to story number one from each of our panelists, Lisa Mascolo of Accenture and former head of ICE, Julie Myers-Wood. When In-Depth continues, we'll get to number one on the Federal News Countdown.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, with help from the U.S. Coast Guard and Navy, has started to survey a new ship anchorage site at the mouth of the Mississippi River in the Gulf of Mexico for ships to undergo inspection and oil decontamination before entering ports. Shipping vessels are currently facing increasing time delays and other challenges as they try to avoid the oil slicks caused by the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. A magnetometer survey of a proposed alternate anchorage site would ensure the safety of ships, their crews, and the marine environments by making sure that there are no buried pipelines in the proposed area that would be ruptured by ships lowering their anchors. Maritime commerce is important to farmers especially, who need to keep exporting their crops through Gulf ports, and millions of retail outlets nationwide rely on a constant flow of imports.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Movie producers, dolphin trainers, intelligence agents on bicycles. Believe it or not, these are all federal jobs. All this week in our special week-long series, Cool Jobs in Government, Federal News Radio uncovers some of the most interesting ways feds spend their days. You'll hear about a Postal Service employee who spends her days in a cave, a meteorologist who forecasts space weather, and what it takes to drill a hole in the deepest part of the ocean. Cool Jobs in Government, all this week at 8 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. with Julie Myers-Wood and Lisa Mascola, my panelists this week, choosing the news stories that they think are the three most important federal news stories of the week. And we are up to
number one.
The top news story of the week, as chosen by Julie Myers-Wood, is from the Washington Times with the headline, Justice Department says sanctuary cities safe from law. And I went right to this quote from Lamar Smith in this story. For the Justice Department to suggest that they won't take action against those who passively violate the law, who fail to comply with the law, is absurd. And I think that summarizes the sentiment of a lot of people once you get outside the Beltway.
I think that's exactly right. And I think that sentiment is shared by many members of law enforcement who are very concerned by the growing prevalence of sanctuary cities. Philadelphia recently said it's no longer going to turn over names of potential criminal aliens to ICE. That's not passive activity. That's active activity. And I think the administration really missed an opportunity to stand up against sanctuary cities. They didn't even have to sue them to say, we don't believe in sanctuary cities. We think cities should cooperate with criminal aliens, with federal law enforcement. And they didn't do that. And I think that's a sad thing to see. As this administration is trying to build some sort of momentum at some point for immigration reform. And if you can't bring along kind of some of the other side, I think it's going to be very hard to do that.
Here's what I don't understand. What's to gain for Philadelphia to be a sanctuary city? What do they get by having a bunch of undocumented, and we'll call them whatever we want to call them, but whatever the term is. But what's to gain by being a magnet for people to come there and live? That's what I don't get.
Well, certainly immigrants, legal and illegal, do all sorts of things that are valuable kind
no
of
question
in our
about
society.
That. Agreed.
I think for sanctuary cities, for people who say we're not going to turn over the names of criminal aliens, a city like Philadelphia would say, well, a crime victim isn't going to come forward if we share names of criminal aliens with ICE.
Okay.
I think the jury is actually out. I think that's not proven to be the case. But Philadelphia, what they gain from this is the pat on the back from the immigrant advocate groups. And, you know, that's really what they gain, kind of just moral support from those groups. And that's really about it. And so I hope that the Obama administration, as it looks at being very aggressive with Arizona, will also look, if they're serious about immigration as a federal responsibility, will look, how can we be serious about making sure that criminal aliens, who we all agree should be leaving this country, you know, are identified? And if they don't, what is going to happen? Is it another illegal alien is going to get out of jail, you know, murder a cop like happened in Houston, happened in Phoenix, and then ICE is going to be blamed for that, even though the sanctuary city policy was in effect and ICE had no ability to do something differently. And so that's why I think it affects federal workers as well.
I'm surprised by the amount of coverage that Governor Brewer has not gotten. She's tried to say a number of times, look, we're just trying to protect our people, which is my view of what the job of a governor is, and a state legislature in a state is to do, is to protect the people of that state, same as Congress's job is to do the same thing for the entire country.
That's right, although I do think the initial drafting of SB 1070, the Arizona bill, went a little too far in certain respects, and it gave critics ready ammunition.
Yeah.
And I think the law could have been drafted more narrowly. And in fact, the Arizona law prohibits sanctuary cities, which is great. And, you know, you don't see anybody complaining about that because that's a reasonable provision. And I think the revised Arizona law actually is a lot more reasonable in certain aspects, but Governor Brewer and others still are getting hit on the original provisions, and it, you know, doesn't give them much room to argue.
Yeah, that's true. What do you see when you read the story, Lisa?
It's hard to understand what the upside really is. It's not like there's a lot of tax revenue coming in as a result. And perhaps the reverse is true, that it costs a lot more.
Well, some would say that there is tax revenue coming in because a lot of individuals are paying taxes for the individuals they're impersonating. And so that money is then coming in. So some cities would say that that's where the value is. I think long-term, supporters of sanctuary cities often want immigration reform, which I do as well, but I don't think the right way,
it's not the right way to
is
do it.
To just kind of avoid the law in the meantime. And I think for the U.S. government to say, it's okay, it's okay to avoid the law in the meantime, really puts the law enforcement officers of ICE and of every other federal agency at great risk.
I mean, does that mean then you get to pick which laws you want to enforce or you think are enforceable. If it's a law and you don't like it, fine, change it. Don't not enforce it.
Well, that's the point that Congressman Smith makes in this piece. He says, well, they ignore individuals who fail to pay taxes. Well, they ignore banking laws that require disclosure of transactions over $10,000. Of course not. And that, I think, is the most powerful argument. If you decide, or if somebody can arbitrarily decide which laws we're going to enforce and which ones we're not, what opportunity does that present for corruption?
Well, that's exactly right. And you always have, at the Department of Justice, prioritization to mm-hmm. prioritize certain crimes. It's one thing to prioritize certain crimes. It's another thing for a Department of Justice spokesperson to say, basically, you know, we endorse sanctuary cities.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, I think, goes a long way. And I was surprised it wasn't picked up more broadly in the press.
And do you get to use it as a defense? Well,
that's exactly right.
Yeah. A lot here, and a lot more that we could talk about, and I'd love to, but we've got a great story chosen by Lisa Mascolo as number one. Julie, your story number one of the week is a Washington Times story under the headline, Justice Says Sanctuary Cities Safe from Law, and you can find it later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Lisa, your story number one is next up when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Eric.
The Army is no longer using the term psychological operations for the unit tasked with changing minds behind enemy lines. They say it sounds threatening. Now it's going to be called Military Information Support Operations. A U.S. Special Operations Command spokesman said it more accurately reflects the unit's job of producing leaflets, radio broadcast, and loudspeaker messages to influence enemy soldiers and civilians. I'm J.J. Green.
Have you ever wondered about the logistics required to travel by air from one location to another? Last year in the U.S. alone, more than 821 billion passenger miles were flown in and out of 20,000 airports. Behind the scenes, this requires 15,000 air traffic controllers to support 590,000 pilots with air-to-ground communications. Eric understands this better than anyone. For nearly eight decades, Eric has worked to develop and advance aviation communications around the world, resulting in reduced congestion. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
Here's Robert Lentz, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, Cyber Identity and Information Assurance, on the Cyber Warfare Prevention Securing Your Software and Applications panel, sponsored by Fortify Software.
75% of the breaches are occurring at the application level. So a lot of our network defense capabilities aren't doing the job. We've long recognized the application layer has been a major source of vulnerability. Well, we really have tried to deal with it in a way that has left this area open for the kind of attacks that we're seeing every single day.
To listen to the program made possible by Fortify Software in its entirety, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Your mission-critical IT system just got hacked. Confidential data stolen. Could this have been prevented? Fortify Software Security Assurance Solutions are helping government organizations secure the software they depend on to run their agency's most mission-critical operations. Find the vulnerabilities inside your software. Fix them quickly and cost-effectively. Fortify your applications with security. Visit fortify.com. That's fortify.com.
Deloitte invites you to join Debriefs, a series of 60-minute webcasts focused on topics of interest to federal and state government executives. Debriefs webcasts feature their professionals discussing critical issues that affect your organization. For more information and to register, visit Deloitte.com/US/debriefs. That's visit Deloitte.com/US/debriefs.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for July is the Lupus Foundation of America. More than 80,000 people in the greater D.C. area have lupus, and most are women. Lupus is a chronic, life-threatening autoimmune disease with no known cure. The expanded Lupus Foundation of America, D.C., Maryland, Virginia chapter offers many free services, such as support groups and workshops, to help patients live life to the fullest. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com. Community Spotlight is brought to you by Ackerman Security Systems.
Back to wrap up today's Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And we have a number one story this week from the Washington Post as chosen by Lisa Mascolo of Accenture. The headline is Clinton bids adieu to Jack Lew. He, of course, is leaving the State Department to go back to his old job at the Office of Management and Budget. He's going to become OMB director. as a journalist, I'm supposed to say he's been nominated to become OMB director again. Is there any human breathing that pays any attention to this that thinks that he won't be confirmed, Lisa?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean,
it seems a pretty straightforward choice.
He's been confirmed to the job once already in the Clinton administration, did by all accounts a good job, and was confirmed by the Senate for his position at state, what, like 20 minutes ago. And so there's no reason. I mean, you've been through this process. There's no flags. Do you see any flags at all, Julie?
I don't see any flags at all. I mean, from what we know now, he seems like a great pick. Mm-hmm. And I think the administration is lucky to have somebody who has that much experience at OMB to come in at this incredibly critical time of crisis for our country.
And see, that's the question that I had. He's done it once before. Why, of all jobs to have, why would he want to do it now?
Well,
I mean, he must have really loved the gig, or else they gave him a really great deal.
I think he probably really loved the gig.
Uh-huh.
Well, and many people say, who go into positions like this, that when the president asks you to do something, you know, for the good of the country, you say yes. And you have to imagine that that was what the conversation was like between President Obama.
Yeah.
You know,
it's hard to imagine a greater challenge, right? We just crossed the $1 trillion mark in the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And as I noted before, 44% of our government runs on borrowed money. We've got a huge crisis. So somebody who's got a demonstrated track record of at least having presided over a surplus, I think it was $250 billion or something at some point, at least we've got a fighting chance to have somebody in the job who might have a perspective that might help.
Well, I'll give the guy credit. He's got guts, because this is one of those real zero or hero opportunities where if it doesn't turn out, he's got a potential to really be remembered poorly and remembered for nothing else. And if he's able to do something there like he did before, then he's going to be one of the greatest people we've ever had, because, boy, are we in
a hole. Well, I think the challenge and the way you have to think about it, and we were talking off the air a little bit about, you know, is he going to be the good guy or the bad guy?
Mm-hmm.
And how is he going to be perceived? I think the challenge is to figure out how to be the good guy all the way around, how to do even more with even less. There's never been a time when the government didn't have to figure out how to do even more with even less, because you still have expectations of taxpayers or benefit recipients or warfighters. You still have to meet those expectations, and you got to find a way to do them with even fewer resources, dollars. Mm-hmm.
And one of the nice things about his appointment, unlike some of the other reappointments from people in the Clinton administration, is he's now been in this administration.
Yeah.
He's seen the Department of Homeland Security in action. He's seen kind of the post 9/11 environment. So I think he really comes in a good place to make those tough calls with credibility very early on.
Excellent observation and terrific choices for stories this week, ladies. It's been one of the best countdowns we've had in a long time. Lisa Mascola of Accenture, your story number one in the countdown this week is headlined, Clinton bids adieu to Jack Lew, about Mr. Lew being nominated to become the next director of the Office of Management and Budget. All the stories available at federalnewsradio.com. Lisa, thank you very much. Julie, thank you very much. It's great to see you again and have you on the countdown. Our next Federal News Countdown, next Friday at 2 on In Depth with Francis Rose. The Dorbeck Insider is up next between 3 and 7 this afternoon, and I'm back with a brand new In Depth on Monday at 1. Thanks for listening.